History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, we've learned, if we'll just take the initiative to ask a few questions and, of course, take the time to patiently listen to what comes back our way. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This episode and the one before it were both recorded at the National Museum of World War II Aviation in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And maybe you're saying, hey, I've been to Colorado Springs. I haven't been to that museum. Well, maybe you didn't know it was there. It might be because it's one of the newest museums, only open to the public since 2012. If you're a longtime listener to Hometown Heroes, you've heard us talk to World War II veterans at quite a few different museums and memorials around the country. From San Diego to Las Cruces and Lubbock, places like Julesburg, Colorado, Ruston, Louisiana, of course, Washington, D.C., and I guess I can't list them all, but all over our country, there are people dedicated to keeping this kind of history alive. And each one of these special places can give you a little bit different perspective. One of the things that makes the National Museum of World War II Aviation in Colorado Springs unique is that the planes in its collection actually fly. I have some photos from the museum posted for you at hometownheroesradio.com and on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. If you happen to see the museum's B-25 with In the Mood painted on the nose, you probably wouldn't realize that you may have seen it before. If you saw the film Pearl Harbor, it was that very B-25 flying off the deck of an aircraft carrier in that movie's recreation of the Doolittle Raid on Tokyo. I'm sure you would not be surprised to know that you can learn all about the Doolittle Raid at the National Museum of World War II Aviation, but you might be surprised to learn that the man who flew that B-25 off the carrier in that film was none other than the museum's president and CEO, Bill Clares. During any given visit, you may stumble across Bill checking out progress on the active rebuild projects inside the museum's Westpac restoration hangar. Other airworthy aircraft that you'll find there include a P-38 Lightning, a P-47 Thunderbolt, an F-4U Corsair, and an SBD Dauntless Dive Bomber, among others. I have a link to the museum's website up for you at hometownheroesradio.com. They're open there Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and of course, World War II veterans always get in free. You actually heard from one of those World War II veterans on our last episode. Bill Roach told you about the two crash landings he survived in B-17s before becoming a prisoner of war. But we didn't have time to include Bill's comments about the National Museum of World War II Aviation.
Well, I appreciate the fact that they're very realistic. I mean, it's an authentic museum. All of the artifacts and all of everything they have here is authentic. And they're trying to get a B-17, I understand, but I don't know if they're going to get one. You've probably toured it. You know what they have here, so I think they've done a great job. I was here when we dug the dirt for this thing. Now I know they're going to build another hangar. I've been in a lot of museums. I go to our reunions, and we always go to the museum. Of course, the one in Dayton is the biggest, and there are a lot of museums all over the United States, and I think this compares favorably with some of them.
What does it mean to you that history that you and so many others lived in World War II is being preserved this way?
Well, it means a lot. It means a lot because I occasionally talk to some students and they don't know a thing about World War II, much less the 8th Air Force. Hopefully when Spielberg's thing comes out, we might know a little bit more about the 8th Air Force. But right now, you talk to people and unless they come to the museum and they give them a nice briefing here, tell them about how everything went, in the air war in Europe and so forth. But I know, I think they're doing a really, really good job here.
Again, that is Bill Roach. And if you missed his story last time, you can pull it up, of course, at hometownheroesradio.com. And, you know, you don't have to wait for Steven Spielberg's miniseries, Masters of the Air, to come out to learn about the 8th Air Force or any other aspect of aviation during World War II. Just go to Colorado Springs, spend a day at the museum. Mark Schaefer spends a lot of days at that museum, and some of the items in their extensive gift shop are actually his handiwork. Mark is also a volunteer with Honor Flight of Southern Colorado, part of the National Honor Flight Network, which hopes to again start taking veterans to their memorials in Washington, D.C. this fall. Mark Schaefer is the one who brought Bill Roach and the young lady we're going to hear from in a bit, Betty Dengis, to the museum to share their stories, both with you on the radio and with the stream of visitors pouring into the museum.
What have you learned from all these World War II veterans that you've interacted with through Honor Flight Southern Colorado and here at the National Museum of World War II Aviation?
Wow. They're probably the toughest. Not only are they the greatest generation, but they're probably the toughest generation because these guys are born during the Depression. They grew up during poverty, and I don't know if they ever, I wonder if they could ever see a year ahead or a month ahead and said, you know, are we ever going to get out of this? And then just as things start to get better, suddenly we're in a world war for our very existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to go through that, you must be awfully tough. And so they're the toughest generation as well as the greatest.
And with Honor Flight Southern Colorado, you've taken so many of them to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. Why is that mission so important? Why do you guys keep doing that as volunteers to create this opportunity for veterans?
You know, when we build in our nation's capital a monument to honor the men and women that have done so much for our country, and so many of them that would not be able to go on their own, don't have the financial means to go. It is just amazing to take these people there and see American people standing, applauding, talking to them, thanking them, honoring them. It's just, they deserve it. And to be able to watch that, to me, is the best, my favorite moment. I just stand back and let America say, talk to these people.
As long as I've been doing this show, I've caught a lot of flack from the veterans that I interview because the name of the show is Hometown Heroes, and they say, well, I'm not a hero. The heroes are the ones who didn't come home. And I understand you've had a lot of conversations along those lines, and it even caused you to come up with a T-shirt that helps raise money for Honor Flight Southern Colorado and is available here at the National Museum of World War II Aviation.
Yes.
Tell me that sentiment that you came up with and what the thinking behind it is.
So I've been to a number of World War II, five World War II cemeteries, American Battle Monument cemeteries in Europe, France, Belgium, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Italy, Anzio. And when I was walking through Anzio, we all know that these men and women, and there are some women there, have died at a very young age. But when I was at Anzio, I realized every single person in here, the thousands of people in here, died a fearful, violent death. And I thought, you know, we have an obligation to the soldier who didn't come home to honor the veteran who did. And I've tried to live my life by that. Some people try to change that saying, I'm sticking to it. That's how I feel. That's how I'm going to live it. Someday maybe they'll put that in my tombstone. And hopefully they'll add the words, he did.
And I know we don't have time to talk about all the things you've done for these veterans, but here at the museum, there are a few pieces of evidence of that. The shirts that are available and support those causes. And there are a bunch of little vials of sand. And some of them are places you just mentioned, like Anzio, like Omaha Beach, battles in the Pacific like Iwo Jima, Guam, Tinian. Why do you do that?
It's hallowed ground. You know, every time I pick up one of those vials, I wonder if there isn't a little American DNA in some of that sand.
Mm.
And it kind of hits the heart thinking, you know what? The men and women, some people, their lives ended here. They went into, fundamentally I can say I understand what they went through, but I'm so thankful that I have no comprehension of what a soldier goes through in combat. And they are heroes. If they tell me they're not a hero, I won't accept that answer. I tell them, you know, some say they don't feel like a hero, and I say there's no emotion tied with being a hero. It's not how you feel. It's how we feel about you. And some will say, I'm not a hero. The guy who didn't come home was a hero. That is absolutely true, but you don't have to die to be a hero. And then some will say, you know, I'm just not a hero, and I will say, you don't get to choose my heroes.
And with respect to Honor Flight Southern Honor Flight Southern Colorado, if somebody listening wants to support that mission, wants to help more veterans go see their memorials, wants to participate in some way, whether it's financial or volunteering their time, What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, they can go to our website, honorflightsoco.org. We have a website that will explain, I hope it explains a lot of what we have available. We have volunteer positions. They can also use a phone number they can call. They can leave a message. The president of our Honor Flight says he checks the messages twice a day. And he is very responsible and very good about getting back to people. And we would love to have him. We meet once a month, usually the third Thursday of the month. And we talk about Honor Flight. And, you know, it's an amazing thing we're doing. Earl Morse was so right on, spot on when he said, we need to get these people to D.C. Wouldn't it be a shame if these memorials in D.C. are there? And if you're building them in the Capitol, and yet the people that they were built for never got the opportunity to see them. That would not be, I think Abraham Lincoln said, a nation that doesn't honor its veterans will not endure. How many hundred and some years ago? And that still stands today. I think he's right. I just thank everybody that does support Honor Flight, anybody out there that supported Honor Flight, whatever chapter, whatever hub. We are not in competition with each other. It is amazing that it's like a giant family. In Colorado Springs, you know, they say that there's 4,300 nonprofit organizations here. And that may be true for many other cities as well, but I don't know of any volunteer organization that is anything close to what Honor Flight does. So you may have a lot of ones for blindness, for deafness, for people with various disabilities, and they're all great organizations, don't get me wrong. But there's probably only one organization in your area that does what Honor Flight does. So I hope that America steps up. It's very hard always to ask people for money. It's not an easy thing to do. But when you think about what you're doing, it really makes it a lot easier. So I hope we can get people to support our hubs.
That is Mark Schaefer with Honor Flight Southern Colorado. And I'm going to give you a phone number. We don't do this very often, but if you'd like one of those shirts that he designed with that quote, "I have an obligation to the soldier who didn't come home to honor the veteran who did," those shirts are in the gift shop at the National Museum of World War II Aviation. But if you can't make it there and you'd still like to order one of those shirts, you can call this number, area code 719-205-0003. I'll say it one more time, 719-205-0003. I also have a photo of that shirt at hometownheroesradio.com and on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also find a photo of an exhibit that certainly grabbed my attention. It memorializes the Flying Greek, Colonel Steve Pisanos, complete with a life-size likeness of the legendary pilot. There are photos and narratives, but we had the chance to hear some of that from Colonel Pisanos himself a few years ago on this program. He passed away in 2016, but what an incredible story he had. Steve snuck his way to America on a merchant ship before World War II. He flew Spitfires in one of the RAF Eagle squadrons before getting into the cockpit of P-51s. And this colorful ace had more than his fair share of aerial encounters with German fighter planes.
FW-190s, enemy 109s. I shot down 10 of them. Mm-hmm. 6 FW-190s and 4 ME-109s. And funny, you know, years later, after the war, I met Adolf Galland, a German great guy, you know. And so he was asking me, and you shot down the ME? Oh, I said, yes, General. And wonderful guy, absolutely superb.
10 planes claimed makes you a double ace.
Correct.
But you're over there flying for the Royal Air Force against these German fighters. I imagine you had more than your share of close calls.
Oh, my God, quite a bit, yeah.
What stands out in your mind? If people read your book, what are the ones they're going to say, holy moly, is that the truth?
After 106 missions, I was on an escort mission down to Bordeaux, France, and we got into a fight there. I sat down three of the guys there, and, of course, on the way back, I lost my engine flying a P-51, and I crash-landed south of Le Havre, about 25, 30 kilometers. The Germans came after me. I was trying to put fire on my crashed Mustang, and they began to fire over my head all over the place. And I got so scared, I dropped everything, and I ran, and I got into a forest. They came into the forest, and it was then how I more or less lost them. And for 5 days, I wandered all over the countryside with an injured shoulder, and then about 5 days later, I made contact with the resistance. Thank God I had learned French in high school in Athens, but I never really thought that I would speak French in America, you know, but it came handy, you know, at that time, and I'll never forget one of my Frenchman friends, you know, he told the other guy, he said, Le Grec American parle français. You know, the Greek American speaks French. And they took care of me so wonderful. And I got decorated by Charles de Gaulle with two kisses when I was given the French Croix de Guerre. And about 3-4 years ago, I got a letter from the American Embassy in Washington. Dear Colonel Pisanos, the government in Paris discovered that you contributed immensely for our liberation, and they have awarded you the Legion of Honor, the highest French decoration. They wanted to know whether I could go to Washington to be decorated. I told them that I couldn't make it. They came out here, and they presented me with the decoration at the museum in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unbelievable. There were more people and friends and everybody.
I imagine you received some pretty heady decorations from our government as well.
Oh, yeah.
During the war.
I got 5 DFCs and the Legion of Merit with 2 clusters. And
5 Distinguished Flying Crosses, no big deal. You mentioned that incident. After 106 missions between flying the Spitfires with the RAF and flying American fighters, you're in a P-51. You're shot up, and you brought it in for a crash landing. Did you think about trying to bail out at any point?
Well, I tried to, but I was having difficulties when I decided not to bail out in high altitude because the Germans were really shooting at anybody coming down in a parachute. So I decided to wait until I get lower, but then, as I tried to unstrap myself, you know, I was so goddamn close to the ground, and I had stepped out on the from the cockpit, and I was just ready to, you know, when the aircraft was to hit the ground, you know, try to. But thank God, the right wing hit the ground. The aircraft twisted to the right a little bit, and I was thrown way, just missing the prop, the stop prop, you know. And how long I stood right there, you know, lying on my back, and I looked up in the sky, and I said, my God, I said, my shoulder, and so on. And it was then when the Germans evidently had spotted me and followed the aircraft, you know, when I crash-landed.
So you weren't even at the controls when you crash-landed.
Oh, yeah.
You were standing.
I was standing outside the cockpit.
Trying to jump.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, my book has the photo on the outside of the book. Mm-hmm. Shows how I'm standing out by the cockpit, outside the cockpit.
Uh-huh. I've seen that photo, and I'll make sure it's on our website at hometownheroesradio.com. So you jump off, you're banged up, you're injured, but the Germans are still shooting at you.
Yeah, and when I saw the bullets flying all over my head, you know, I decided to drop everything, forget about burning the aircraft, you know, and I began to run. And thank God I was close to the forest there, and that's when I got into the forest. And they came along too, and I lost them in the forest, of course. And for 5 days, I wandered all over the countryside, and I drank water from running creeks, and I found a farm, you know, that had cabbage in my gut. I ate a whole cabbage one day. I was so hungry and scared and injured and so on. And until later on, I made contact with the French.
Right, so this French resistance, the underground, gets you out of there. And then did you go back to flying?
No. When Paris was liberated and some 800 Americans came out from hiding, B-17 guys and fighter pilots, of course, we were all brought back to England, and I went back to my unit, but they wouldn't let me fly. So I was returned to the States, and I was assigned to Dayton, Ohio at Wright Field.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I went through test pilot school with Yeager and Don Gentile and all those guys. And I took a good part in testing the P-80, the first jet we had at Muroc Lake.
I think people are getting the idea from your cross-Atlantic journey that you're plotting and no one else knows about, that you're going to jump off in America, to going over to fly for the British, to all these missions for the British and the Americans, to then back as a test pilot. It doesn't seem like you're afraid of much.
No.
Where does that come from?
I don't know. I don't know. The Greek blood or something.
The late, great Steve Pisanos, whose legacy is preserved at the National Museum of World War II Aviation in Colorado Springs. When we come back, another veteran I had the privilege of meeting at the museum. She is one of 300,000 American women who served in uniform during the war. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.